Good morning and welcome. My name is Robin Proud. My pronouns are she, her, hers. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your sexual orientation, family structure, age, abilities, inabilities. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of programs. Sometimes they are from outside speakers, and sometimes, as today, from our own group. Our opening words will be read by Margaret Moses.
Good morning. In Ecclesiastes, the author offers his thoughts on life, death, and what it all means. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. Warming to his theme, he continues, there is a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to weep and a time to laugh. The full list has 28 different times and covers 8 biblical verses. It has become one of the most quoted and most popular passages in the Old Testament. In 1959, the famous words even became a surprise hit when they were set to music by the folk musician Pete Seeger in a song called Turn, Turn, Turn. Covered by the Byrds in 1965, the track rocketed to number one on the U.S. singles chart. The Iron Age lyrics are by far the oldest words ever to have become a chart-topping hit. That information comes from the Reader's Digest. Mark Twain says this, the Bible has noble poetry in it, and some good morals, and a wealth of obscenity, and upwards of 1,000 lies.
A chalice lighting will be read by Morris Sedicario.
We light this chalice for our children and youth, and for us, celebrating the flame of faith lit in each of us, honoring the light each of us brings into the world, rejoicing in the community we create together.
Well, I volunteered to preside today because there was no way I wanted to miss the program that was led by Aaron. And I think maybe Aaron needs no introduction. That somewhere I read about organizations, how there's a certain kind of person who sort of knows what's going on with everyone, and even if they're not saying what it is, knows something about that. And Aaron may be the first person that a lot of you met here, and maybe the reason you came back. So I'm sure she'll tell us more about her specific program and what led her to present that today. So please welcome Aaron Bosch.
So I thought I was probably going to have to truncate my presentation today because we have a welcoming ceremony later for a new baby. But no announcements, no joys and concerns. We may get a lot of time to talk here. So, as you probably know, I am one of the chairs of the membership committee. And this presentation germinated in an introduction to Prairie session, which we do twice a year. And this past November, one of our newcomers brought his wife to the presentation, and she had never been to a Prairie service. She asked a lot of great questions, and one of them was, she said, so at a service, are there any references to the Bible? And I said, on a typical Sunday morning, no, you will not hear any references to the Bible unless someone decides to do an entire service on the Bible. I also, as a follow-up to those introduction to Prairie sessions, I usually send out an email with some links to past programs, and specifically the series of programs that Ann Lundeen did in 2008 called This I Believe. And I was one of the first to present during that series, and I reread my contribution recently, and in it I mentioned a couple of my favorite Bible stories. So apparently this program was meant to be, because those were two instances that made me suggest it to the program committee. Most, but not all of us, come from a Judeo-Christian background. you probably know that I'm from a Catholic background. There were some really positive and negative things about growing up Catholic, and today I'm going to talk about the positives related to the Bible stories that I heard as I was growing up. But, as they do in a court of law sometimes, the parties stipulate things so there's no argument about it. I'm first going to stipulate that there are some horribly repugnant things in the Bible that cause people to do some really abhorrent discrimination and hatred. So we'll just acknowledge that that's the case and instead turn to the positives, which there are some. And while hypocrisy is rampant in the Christian right, I do believe there is a much less odious Christian left, and some of my Catholic relatives would fall into that category, I believe. They are ardent Democrats, and so I'm happy that they are voting for human rights, etc. And you may have heard of the nuns on the bus, obviously Christian left. I don't know how they manage that, actually, with the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, but they do. So, that being stipulated, my plan today is to concentrate on the better parts of the Bible. And one last disclaimer, I certainly am not a biblical scholar. These are my just personal reflections on what I heard growing up. In the Catholic tradition, the Gospels that are read on the Sunday are in a three-year rotation, so that on like the fourth Sunday of September, you will hear every third year the same Gospel story. So in the 18 years of going to Mass almost every Sunday, I heard the same stories over and over. Most of them I've forgotten, but there are a few that I have remembered, and I think they're the ones that made me think, that made me stop and say, And so those are the ones that I'm going to share with you. Well, one of them was the Good Samaritan, although there's not too much to discuss with that one, but we can talk about that later if you want. The first one I will read is a parable that Jesus told that is found in the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 10, verses 1 to 16. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "Those who were here hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day." But he answered one of them, "I am not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. So I listened to that story as a kid. And when you're a kid, you have a very heightened awareness of fairness. If the teacher's playing favorites, you are incensed. Or if one of you or someone you know gets unfairly accused, you are just so angry. So I listened to that story over and over, and I when I was younger, just thought it was completely unjust. And I had a hard time swallowing it. But as I got a little older, I came to a little different understanding of it and realized that perhaps the early workers actually should not have been upset, since they got exactly what they had expected to receive. And the owner was just extra generous to the latecomers. And I had some experiences in life that put that understanding into practice. For example, when I discovered a coworker was making more money than I was. And I reflected on that, and I realized I really felt that I was being paid fairly, and I was making more money than I ever thought I would. So I said to myself, "Aaron, it's no skin off your teeth if Carol is making a bit more." I was mostly annoyed that someone had let that information enter my ears, because I didn't really need to know that, and that was a mistake. And so what you don't know can't hurt you would have been another aphorism that could have applied to the situation. But when I was in the midst of that situation, I really did hearken back to this Bible story. I remembered it, and it helped me to say, okay, you can just let that be. So my thinking about this parable is somewhat simple, personal, has to do with human nature. There are also religious interpretations, and I even found one on the internet that is more modern and somewhat political. So I will read you the religious interpretation, which is that it has often been interpreted to mean that even those who are converted late in life earn equal rewards along with those converted early. And this is really the main homily on the Sunday that this comes up. It's not a lot of the other things that you've said. An alternative interpretation identifies the early laborers as Jews, some of whom resent the latecomers, Gentiles, being welcomed as equals into God's kingdom. However, this one philosopher writes, "While interpreting and applying this parable, the question inevitably arises, who are the 11th hour workers in our day? We want to name them, such as deathbed converts, or persons who are typically despised by those who are longtime veterans and more fervent in their religious commitment. But it is best not to narrow the field too quickly. At a deeper level, we are all the 11th hour workers. To change the metaphor, we are all honored guests of God in the kingdom. It is not really necessary to decide who the 11th hour workers are. The point of the parable, both at the level of Jesus and the level of Matthew's gospel, is that God saves by grace, not by our worthiness. That applies to all of us." A more modern one was written in 2017, more modern interpretation, for the Huffington Post by Matthew L. Skinner, a professor of New Testament at Luther Seminary in St. Paul. "This parable draws all its force and illustrative potential from the dynamics of economic life. Whom, then, should we think the landowner encounters when he's looking for workers late in the afternoon? What kind of people are the last to find jobs, added to the roles only when there's no more labor available? Nothing suggests that those characters in the parable are irresponsible or lazy. More likely, they are unwanted. In Jesus' time, these would be the weak, infirm, and disabled, maybe the elderly too, and other targets of discrimination, such as criminals or anyone with a bad reputation. A God who is just, then, is inclined to show special generosity to the poor and outcast. No wonder the respectable people get anxious. But don't stop there. If we're composing a list of people who have to wait all day long to get hired, in our current setting, we need to expand it. Add the unemployed and underemployed to the list. Undocumented immigrants also belong on the list, for who hires them these days? The parable's landowner might be at risk of prosecution in Alabama, depending on the outcome of a battle over that state's new immigration law. It's a severe law allegedly spurred by the national unemployment crisis. But one legitimately wonders how the law's rough justice squares with a Bible that repeatedly commends hospitality and compassion towards refugees, strangers, and other aliens. The parable makes us pause to consider questions about what kinds of people are in need of whatever is right. Who needs benevolence the most? How might a society that promises justice for all stop vilifying, shaming, and neglecting the precise kinds of people to whom God most desires to express unusual generosity? You don't have to read much of the Bible before you notice that it is God's preference to show uncommon compassion to those who don't have it so good, who have been denied a dignified place in the system. We get that. What chafes me about it, especially in response to this parable, isn't that I want extra doses of compassion for myself. Rather, I wish that God's modus operandi didn't make me and countless others look so cheap in comparison. Through our own sad inability to allow benefits to go to the people who need them the most. Whoa. That's a pretty good interpretation. It may be a bit of a stretch, but it's good. And I think an example of something that would be a sermon to the Christian left. And there certainly is that group, and this is an example of that. I'm still looking here. Okay, plenty of time. You guys were so good. I was going to not do this next story if we ran out of time. My next example is the story of Martha and Mary. It's not a parable, really. It's a description of an encounter Jesus had in their home. According to Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." The story struck me because I thought Jesus was being pretty unfair to Martha, again with the fairness issue, because I heard these first when I was a kid, and that was really uppermost. However, I didn't change my mind about this one. I am by nature a Mary. I gravitate to the living room for interesting conversations, game playing, etc. But I have always recognized that we need Marthas. My sister Denise is a Martha. There were many, many gatherings in her home, and she provided all the food, etc. So I had to remember to go in the kitchen and help her. And this story from the Bible actually helped me to do that. And even though, I'm telling you, my sister had to load the dishwasher herself. No one else could load her dishwasher. She practically washed the dishes before she put them in there, and they were in a certain spot, but she would let me help in some manners. And these Marthas really deserve our appreciation, and I just think Jesus was not acknowledging that. Without knowing I was doing this service at Prairie, this kind of a service today, my daughter stopped by to drop off a kid with me for a week, and we were just talking, and she said she had come from a gathering of her husband's family south of Chicago. And she said, "So," I said, "how was it?" She said, "It was okay." She said, "So I was in the kitchen helping. I was being a Martha." So apparently I impressed that upon her in her growing up years using this story. I don't remember doing that, but I did try to tell the kids some stories to augment their UU, all their good UU stuff they were learning. So there are a couple of interpretations I found. Didn't make me change my mind exactly, but for the feminist one, from the womeninthebible.net, they say, Mary sat and listened. This was the usual posture of a disciple of any teacher in the ancient world, but disciples were usually male. So Mary must have been quietly breaking the rule that reserved study for males, not females. Her sister Martha was not merely asking for help. She was demanding that Mary keep to the traditional way of behaving. Jesus was ignoring the traditional role of women and encouraging Mary to think and learn. He upheld her right to listen, think about ideas, and to develop her mind. She should not be limited to the task that society laid down for her, but be allowed to access the access to ideas as Jewish men were. Jesus had previously, because we don't remember this though, encouraged the idea of service among his followers. So he did not say that Martha's role of service was unimportant. This would have gone against all his other teaching. What he did say was that being a disciple and learning about the ideas he was explaining was even more important. Again, I think this is a bit of a stretch, but in a good way, you know. If you isolate it, because that's what we're remembering right now, then it's different if you try to think, I can't necessarily corroborate that Jesus was all about the Marthas at other times, but okay. Then here's one more excerpt from an essay by Joel Stuckey in Unlocking the Bible. Martha got a bum rap. We need both Mary's and Martha's. Balance. Say there's a death in your family. Mary will sit with you and put her arms around you while you weep. Now, that didn't necessarily say that. She was just sitting there listening. But anyway. But you still have to eat. Martha's the one who brings you food and makes sure someone waters the plants and walks the dog. Both of them are loving you. You need them both. I can easily spend an hour or more in devotions every morning. Sometimes I have to force myself to stop studying scripture so I can get other things done. That sounds very holy and spiritual, doesn't it? But what if it makes me late for work? What if guests are coming and my wife is left to do all the cleaning herself? What if I really needed to take the car to the shop and now there's no time? The issue isn't only whether Jesus is a higher priority. Of course he is. But Jesus would never want me to sit there reading all day while my house falls apart and my wife feels abandoned. Devotion can be an excuse for laziness, and allowing my life to become that imbalanced would not please the Lord. And again, I think both of those are interpretations coming from the Christian left. They are definitely not UU interpretations. They're not from UU sources. They're from Christian sources. Okay, nuns on the bus are a group of Catholic nuns who got a bus and they travel around the country and they are demonstrating for progressive causes. They were outside Paul Ryan's office and yelling at him. I mean, they really are exactly what we all think, the nuns on the bus thing. And they just kind of compartmentalize that whole abortion issue. And they just say, who cares about that? Let's not be talking about that, because we're concerned about the poor, the kids that are here already, and taking care of them, and so we're not going to talk about that. So how actually they get away with that, I don't know where their money comes from, but I'm sure that there's a lot of bishops that are not happy about the nuns on the bus.
There are a couple things that we need to go back for. I just wanted to say that, Aaron, I think we're going to need some sequels. There are many more stories you could bring us in. Obviously was of interest.
All right, so greet your neighbors and join for coffee and conversation.